Hey guys, this is Cole Weicker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
This is Jochen Graf.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I got a problem.
Everyone, and thank you for joining us one more time. My name is Stephen Cundiff. You are listening to the Unused Substitute Show. We are your green and gold gospel, your best source for year-round Rowdies coverage. We're live on Radio St. Pete Online, part of the Beautiful Game Network. We're presented in part by Roughneck Scarves and Taco Bus. Thank the heavens I'm not alone tonight. I have a full crew backing me up. Matthew Cox, Daniel Endonino. Gentlemen, how are you doing tonight?
It's kind of weird that you've given names to the voices in your head when you are clearly doing this all by yourself.
Yes. It's very sad. Maybe this is a Moon Knight situation, and when I'm by myself, I'm actually, like, flipping consciousness in my own head, and I'm actually, like, playing all three of our roles.
I can't even process Moon Knight comments right now. I just watched the Ms. Marvel finale about 20 minutes before we went on air. Holy crap.
I have to watch that still.
It's incredible. I think Dan thinks he's talking.
Dan,
there's no sound.
Dan thinks he's talking to us. It's actually really funny because he's got hand motions and everything. He was in the middle of some really, really deep thought and probably had some very grandiose thing he was going to mention to us.
If he wasn't Italian, we wouldn't have no clue he was talking.
So here's the, all right. So since we've already derailed the show, so of the three of us, which one is which when it comes to the Moon Knight, personalities?
Oh gosh. Well, considering Dan just left and he's going to like show back up in a few minutes and kind of just, you know, contribute, you know, at the end of this conversation, he's going to be the guy that shows up in the cab. I forget the full name. It's like Joe something, isn't it?
Something like Joe, I think. Yeah. Pretty sure. Jake. It's Jake Lockley.
Yeah.
Jake Lockley.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So that's what you or me for the other two. And basically it comes down to which one is more mentally unstable. And I'll be honest, I can't really.
So Stephen Grant is the mild-mannered British guy. Mark Speck.
I think it's got to be you just because of Steven. Like, I think it's even the Steven with the PH, isn't it?
That kind of, no, it's with a V. That kind of feels like mailing it in a little bit, though. That kind of feels like it's mailing it in.
Well, I mean, that's pretty on brand for us.
Hey, look, Jake just decided to show up.
Here.
Hi, Jake.
What did I miss? Do I want to know?
See? Now, this also means he's the one most likely to kill anyone around him.
at random and without mercy.
That's actually probably accurate.
To be fair, he lives in giant African snail land, so he's got to be ready to kill on a moment's notice.
The quarantine is about a half a mile or south of me. Thank you very much.
Day's not over yet.
Oh, God. All right. I love you guys. Also, of course, as always, we also love every one of our Patreon executive producers. Tonight, that executive producer is Mike Pendleton. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. As always, Mike and his whole family, for everything you guys do for the mob, for everything you do for the Rowdies culture and for the Rowdies in general. And thank you for being supporters of our show. And we appreciate everybody that is a Patreon supporter. That's the best way to support the show. It helps us pay these bills. We couldn't do this without you. If you want to tweet us your thoughts while we're on air, maybe during the week, maybe it's like 3 a.m. and you can't sleep and you're eating a pizza, give us a tweet. At Unused Subs Pod is the mothership account. That's the best way to get a hold of all of us. All right. Okay. So unlike the Rowdies, we're actually going to start the show. Nope, sorry. It's already ruined. We're starting the show off very poorly because we're going to have a better ending. And that's very, very similar to how the Rowdies played this weekend.
So we're going to switch up our tactics midway through and become stronger, unlike whatever we saw last weekend.
We're just going to kind of wander around things and subjects and eventually just land on one, like, hot flaming take and walk away with a victory.
I don't have any takes. I have no takes.
All right. So let's talk about that game. Like, I literally, my notes were just like, was this legit? Was that legit? Was this legit? Because there's so much that went on. You know, sometimes you talk about it being a game of two halves. That was like a game of two halves, but one of the halves was subdivided into two halves of its own. And then stoppage time was like an alternate dimension. This was a game of like three multiverses.
Yeah, this game got punched in the face by America Chavez.
It's a pretty apt description.
I have no idea. Why am I here? I don't even know what these references are.
Very nice. All right.
Oh, man.
So let's try and piece this together as it happened. Rowdies come out playing pretty strongly first half. Get a early one-goal lead from Sebastian Dalgard in a game that, you know, to be fair, felt pretty good, even though it was in a way a game that felt like it was a good chance for the Rowdies to get some points and especially some revenge for the way the last game against Hartford went down. Go into halftime up 1-0. Kind of felt like it could be more, kind of felt like it should be more, and generally start to have that feeling at halftime where I'm a little bit worried about, man, opportunities went wanting. The one good thing about watching some of the Rowdies games this year is you can learn new vocabulary. Like, you may have heard the word rue and see the word used in certain contexts, but you've never really fully understood it. About 10 minutes into the second half, everybody in green and gold fully understand the meaning of the word rue as the Rowdies quickly went down 2-1. So first off, and I'm kind of going through the as it happens, the moments of madness in that multiverse game, the two Hartford goals, lots of complaints on both goals that both were offside. I think pretty clearly the first one, once you see the full replay and you see the angles, not a question about it. All right, do we all agree on that one? First goal clearly onside. At least way more onside than the second one.
You know what's funny? I actually think it's the opposite.
Of course you do. Of course you do. I was. It was hard because to tell on either because there is no real camera angle in Hartford. Yeah. I'm pretty sure the camera was on like Sputnik 1, like in orbiting the Earth. And then they had a GoPro on somebody's foot so you could like zoom in randomly on stupid crap. But so like, and it was just in the middle of the pitch. So like, I watched the USL or the video replay of that second goal, I think. And when they zoom out, I couldn't tell if one of the defenders, I think it was Scarlett, might have been maybe, was holding him on, but it was so hard to tell from that angle. I don't know, but like, again, we've had this conversation 100,000 times in the, you know, over the years about, you know, Zach Steinberger said on the pregame show, be better than the worst ref, and we should have scored 3 or 4 in that first half. So, like, the offside, whatever, but I'm pretty sure at least one of them was probably offside.
In other words, what you're saying is that the camera angle we had was basically... Essentially saying is that the camera operator was Heimdall and that the position of the camera was at the foot of the Rainbow Bridge summoning the Bifrost. That was our angle. It was just that.
So the cameraman was literally filming from Valhalla.
Okay, I understand Thor references. That's just easy.
Yeah.
But...
Okay.
Well, now, Thor or Mighty Thor?
Oh, Jesus. Hot, buff Natalie Portman Thor. How about that one? But...
Recognize now.
Yeah, whatever. I'm just going to go. You guys have fun.
It took like 3 references.
8:14, Steven. 8:14.
He quits after like 3. That's hilarious. Oh, Dan, I want you to know this isn't going to end tonight. I will continue to find ways.
I mean, you can make all the Marvel references you want. I'm not going to get them, and I'm going to look at you like you're crazy anyway. You guys are not going to bully me into watching Marvel. I will not stand for bullying.
Stop. It's only bullying if you do it with your friends, and I don't have friends. I have family, Dan.
Okay, well, now you're just turning over into Fast and the Furious, which is worse. That is worse.
No, that's very clearly a Guardians of the Galaxy reference, sir.
If you've seen the latest movie, you'd know that the Fast and Furious has been brought into the Marvel Universe. And
yeah.
It wouldn't. I mean, Vin Diesel does Groot, so, like, you know, it's already one universe anyway.
It's clearly just Earth 2-3-4. Thank you. This feels like a very big, like, callback episode. Like, it's a, like, we're watching, like, Captain America, the first Avenger, after we've seen all the other Avengers. Like, this is a callback to the good days.
Because Hartford got the super serum at halftime, came out and decided they were going to start playing, and Tampa Bay went full, everyone else trying to get the flag down from the flagpole and not quite getting it done. So still, you know, before we get to the rest of the second half and then stoppage time, we've seen this a couple times, not even necessarily because the Rowdies have a lead, but sometimes it happens then too. But this kind of like played really well in the first half, should have been up, felt like to all of us, announcers even said it should have been up by a couple goals. And then it's like a different team in the second half. What's happening?
See, the way you phrased that was very doom and gloom, and but like they made a point on the broadcast as well. We haven't dropped, we haven't lost since scoring first since basically Neil Collins took over.
Yeah.
If their math is right, and my understanding was, then this game ends up being the 69th straight game which the Rowdies have not lost after scoring the first goal. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, I saw that coming. But yeah, so like, we're making it sound tragic, but we still, you know, won the game and that streak continued. So like, yes, we're, you know, conceding, we're the one thing that different like was better last year and differentiates it from this year and even 2020 is we were able to hold those leads when we would, you know, in one goal games, and it seems to be a struggle, but we're still not like losing, which I mean, drop points suck, but like there is a glass half full take here is, you know, we basically don't lose if we score first under Neil Collins.
I mean, I will say even after giving up two quick goals and going down, I still felt we were going to come out of the game with something. So it's you know, not the end of the world, but it just seems like it's been a pattern this year, at least, of switching off, not even momentarily, but for like large chunks of a game.
I don't know. It's been a weird year, but I don't know about that. Like we're still a great team. I mean, look where we are in the standings and everything. You make it sound like we're just blowing the game for long stretches and in like eighth place. Like we're doing okay.
The Rowdies
would also be tied for first in the conference if we hadn't blown that game to San Diego.
Or the first Hartford game, or
the
you know,
York
like
game,
there's...
or the Miami game, or you know, yeah. I mean, look, I, the Rowdies have done a strange thing this year where they have looked at times more comfortable playing teams towards the top of the table than they have against teams towards the bottom half. So I understand how people can sometimes get worried about a performance like this and get a bit of a doom and gloom impression, because it's like, you just expect, based on where the current positions of the table are, that this club should just run over a club like Hartford. And I'm not going to say those people are wrong, but that's just not, like, if you don't play the game, you know, like, you have to play the game, you know, and both teams are playing it no matter what. So, you know, it's, if the results were automatic like that, there wouldn't be a sport. So, you know, it's if we look at it from the concept of what was working, what potentially wasn't working with this particular game, you know, there is things that were strange about this particular stuff. So we did the 4-2-3-1 again, but like in this match, Lawrence Wyke pushed in towards like the middle of the field far more than he has like in the past. So in a lot of ways, at times it really shifted into like a three back because Lawrence was further up the field most of the game, you know, as an average. And so like the formation was kind of weird in that sense because Hartford was giving us that side of the field while pushing up on us on the other. Let's put it this way. Hartford's two goals were nothing spectacular. The first one was a random error decision by Cochran. The second was kind of just meh. I mean, it slipped on through essentially, but
because he was offside.
I mean, and there's a legit possibility that there's a reason why that play developed the way that it did. But like Hartford didn't come out of this game with like this massive like expected goal number. You know, it's not like Hartford came out and was getting dominant scoring chances repeatedly and only put two away. No, they basically only had like two quarter chances and happened to get both of them in because one was random and one was maybe questionably offsides. And you know, it's when you look at it from that perspective, it wasn't necessarily that bad of a performance. I mean, the guys were still getting shots. You know, it's not like the Rowdies weren't doing. We had more shots overall. We had more shots on target in this match. So it's not like we were not generating offense at all. I mean, distribution-wise, of course, if you start looking at like the individual passing statistics, Hartford had more of the ball. But, I mean, we've come to see that a lot with the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Typically, we can take an early lead or something, kind of sit back for a bit and possess the ball a lot. That's very trademark Tampa Bay. So, like, that statistic alone isn't really all that relevant, depending on the scenario. it was not a bad game by the Rowdies. It just wasn't as crisp as it has been in games past. I mean, even when you look at the fact that, like, our passing numbers overall, right? They were on par with what we've been able to see this year. 85% passing completion for the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Almost 76% passing accuracy in the opponent half of the field. That's a fantastic number.
I'm really curious what opposing teams' conversion rate is against us. I feel like, and this is just a gut feeling, I feel like it's like unusually high and like a weird anomaly this year. Because like you said, like, and it feels like almost a lot of these games, they get one chance and it's like from a weird spot and they bury it. Or they get two chances in, or half chances, or I think you said quarter chances, mm-hmm. and then they bury them. So like, I just feel like the conversion rate against us is like abnormally high, which is, it should probably regress back to a mean, but it is what it is. I don't think the performance was bad. I think that was, as we saw by the ending and that second half in general, it was just chaotic and one that I hope to never experience again.
And that's, going back to the were they or weren't they offside, I felt pretty strongly. The first one seemed questionable to me, but after hearing a couple of the replays, a couple of the commentary on it, I felt pretty good that it was at least if it was offside, it was a borderline decision and it just went the wrong way. The second one, I mean, we clearly saw, like, the entire back line, I think even Cochran, like, just stopped because they felt that the play was offside. And this isn't a team that does that on a regular basis where they, putting hands up after every goal and screaming that everything was offside. It just doesn't happen, especially not the entire group of players like that. So felt pretty sure that one was offside based on the reaction. The referee allowed it. He had an interesting track record of things he was allowing and things he wasn't, both in terms of fouls and in terms of goals. So 56 minute, Hartford takes the 2-1 lead. Rowdies go, it's about 12 minutes or so, and then Steven Dos Santos had possibly the best scoring chance he's had. Honestly, maybe in his entire time he's been in Tampa Bay. Could have leveled the game with a header. He's unmarked, center of the box, just perfect spot for it, and misses it. Redeems himself about 4 minutes later. He's taken down in the box and a penalty is given. Steven, you've got that little grin on your face. How did you feel about that first penalty?
Hold on. Let me hang myself with this microphone cord first.
I thought the first one was fine. I didn't really think there was anything controversial about the first decision.
Oh, okay. I can take this cord out from around my neck until we get to the second one.
Leo Fernandez steps up, scores, third, fourth penalty?
At least three. He's at least three for four on the season. Up until that point.
I don't think he's missed one, has he, this year?
He missed
one. He's missed one. Like 2 weeks ago or something off the post.
Yep.
So scores level at two. All of a sudden, it's game on for the last, 15, 20 minutes or so. Jordan Scarlett sees red, straight red, in the second minute of stoppage time. Originally, the referee puts up, I think, 3 or 4 minutes of stoppage time? I think it was three. Jordan Scarlett sees red in the second minute of stoppage. And I'm going to say I felt that was a little harsh. The way it's described, at least by the commentators, is he goes in, studs up. But to me, watching the replay, he doesn't go into it studs up. He comes out of it, both feet off the ground, but that's after he's got the ball, after the contact's been made with the player afterwards. Yeah, maybe it's a yellow. My bias considered.
I thought it was kind of fair. It looked ugly. At first glance, at real speed, I didn't think it was a red. But if you are going to use the replay and reference the replay, I think it's fair. I mean, did I think it should be? No. But am I upset? No. Like, I guess I'm okay with it for the sheer fact that, like, if it was reversed, and in general, like, player safety should be emphasized a little bit more, and tackles like that, and you can end badly. So I'm not against it. I wasn't happy about the call. I would rather, you know, I don't know, especially in stoppage time like that. I don't know. I'm indifferent either way on that one. I'm not going to hound the ref about that one.
I was okay with it, with the red card decision. It didn't bother me at all. Middle of the field like that, it just wasn't. It was not a very good tackle. In the context of, like, it just was not executed very well at all. I was okay with it.
And then I'm going to have to lean back on some of you guys for the play by play at some point here. In the sixth minute of 3 minutes of stoppage time. So Jordan Scarlett sent off. And at that point, it's survival mode. Get to the whistle. Just get to the whistle. Or so it felt like. Because there was... someone went down injured. I'm trying to remember. I meant to go back and watch it. I didn't get a chance to. Was it a Rowdies player or a Hartford player that went down injured in second half stoppage?
It was the Hartford player after the red card, I thought.
Okay, after the red play. So he was down for a bit.
Yeah, it was during it was that tackle that caused the Hartford player to be down for a bit. And then the ref took him
grossly overselling the injury in order to get the red card. Okay, got it. So I just felt it was unfair, Red. So I'm just going to So in the sixth minute of 3 minutes of stoppage, additional time added on for the injured Hartford player to be treated. During the time period, once the ball gets back into play, like, you really could not tell the Rowdies were the one down to 10 men. They continued to move the ball forward. They continued to get numbers forward and attack. And no one would have blamed them at all for sitting back and playing out the last few minutes, trying to just get out of there with a point. You're down to 10 men. You manage to come back. You draw. A second penalty is awarded to the Rowdies in the sixth minute of stoppage time. And this one, and again, Dan, you mentioned earlier, the camera work was, like, terrible. So looking at it at first, okay, it's clearly a foul. I wasn't sure if it was even in the box, and I'm relying on the commentators at this point. No, it's in the box. It's clearly in the box. It's a foul. It's in the box. To me, you know, the Hartford fans and players are going to feel a different way about this one because of the way it goes down, the time that it goes down at the same time. Well, you've had a player down on the field for several minutes. You should be used to it. You've probably seen this all season. Second penalty is awarded. Leo Fernandez steps up and does it again. And I think we get, like, in a minute and a half or so after that. The Rowdies put everybody back in their half after the ensuing kickoff wisely and run out of there with a shorthanded, come-from-behind, 3-2 win over Hartford. That keeps them in third place in the conference coming out of the weekend. How'd you guys feel about the second penalty?
I have doubts. I have many doubts because I don't know how much contact was really made there at all because we don't have the right angle to make that decision, right? It's we're looking at this from behind the back of the defender. On the TV angle, I don't know if Harris didn't just sell a good dive.
I think my question was pretty much the same as yours, Matt. That, like, if it looked on the line or outside the box or, like, just outside, so I don't know.
keep in mind the way the rules are written. Even if you're fouled out, if the start of a foul occurs outside of the box, outside of the 18, and the play travels into the box during the course of the foul or the play, there is leeway given to a referee to make the decision that, yes, we're going to go ahead and consider this a penalty. That is a part of the laws of the game, or at least the way referees have been instructed to enforce the laws of the game.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he was near the box. It's like he ends in the box.
Because he ends in the box, 100%. Yeah. He's in the box when he hits the turf. So as far as that whole thing, to me, I thought it was very clear that he was in the box. I thought he was the whole way once contact was initiated. I thought he was already there. Even if he's not, the referee has the decision and the leeway depending on how he sees it. Because again, Harris ends in the box at the end of the play regardless. So there is leeway given to a referee to make the call. That's, like I said, that is 100% a part of the game. So it's not like he's pulling a rule out of thin air there.
Like he did the rest of the game?
Yeah.
It felt very much like a letter of the law. Okay, technically he's in the box. Okay, technically there's contact. If it hadn't been called, I don't know there'd be a lot of neutral screaming that it should have been a penalty.
Correct.
It's kind of where I felt on that
one.
But I went with the commentator said, no, there's definitely contact. It's definitely in the box. You just don't see that happen that often. I mean, it was kind of an interesting game.
I don't know, man.
Calls for the blown offside calls.
That's, I kind of wondered that, honestly.
I mean,
at least with the first penalty coming that close after Dos Santos had a clear chance to level that he missed, if they said, well, okay, they're not going to get it done themselves tonight, and we kind of owe them one from the second goal. Let's see. But it's okay now because now they have a union, and that was the only thing standing in the way of them becoming high-quality referees, according to the press release.
Okay. Hold on. Anyways, I will say this. The Rowdies have a knack for late dramatics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's good because it also shows a spirit within the club that – I mean, granted, we've had a lot of recent experience, important recent experience, that's kind of given us this bit of a fuel. But, going down to 10 men doesn't faze us. We've been able to play through that, both times this season that it's happened, and we've not looked bad doing it.
Right.
Even in years past, the recent years, like, going down to 10 men has not been much of an issue for the Tampa Bay Rowdies. So, I think the combination of those two things, it is exciting to be a Rowdies fan because, that you're never out of a match. You know for a fact that this team is just, you can never count them out. And a lot of that spirit to folks like Neil, but a lot of that is just the players' belief in themselves, too. And the work rate and the work ethic that they're putting in every single week, every day on the training ground, to be able to have the fitness and the drive to come in the 90 plus 10 and see that match out on the road in July, right? Like that takes a lot of heart and passion for your craft to do that. So kudos to the players, like absolutely major kudos.
In the preseason against UT, Neil, I think it was Dayon or somebody, like, we were already kind of winning or whatever, and instead of making a sub, Neil just took a player off and played down 10 men. But it made it a 10 men drill. This is something they've been working with because they know, it's going to happen. It's a situation that's going to happen. So, and I think that training is paying off, and this team is talented and probably more talented than a lot of other teams in the league, and it's a little sad that we can play with a hand tied behind her back and still do stuff.
Any last thoughts on the game?
I never want to experience something like that again.
I tell you, it's games like that that make me really glad we're back to the standard home and away schedule, because any other year we'd still have like two more games against Hartford, and I just don't want
to
do it.
I was gonna say I'm glad I don't have to go there anymore.
Yeah, right.
We don't have to play Hartford anymore. That's a victory. That should just count as like a bonus 3 points after you finish playing two games against Hartford. Every team in the league should just get an automatic bonus 3 points. Like, that should just be, like, standard.
I mean, I'd say there's a chance we could see him in the playoffs, but there's really not a chance that we're going to see him in the playoffs. All right. You know what I am glad to see, though? Anyone take a guess?
Is it a bus full of tacos?
Yeah, I am always glad to see a bus full of tacos. And while I don't have that tonight, what we do have... here's some words from our friends at Taco Bus. They proudly deliver a healthy, fresh, authentic Mexican taste experience to our Florida fans. Just one bite of a burrito, tostada, or quesadilla, and your taste buds will be singing traditional Mexican folk songs. And it's okay. It's not cultural appropriation when you do it when you're eating Taco Bus. Visit them today at one of their 11 locations. And remember, keep it chido. Guys, we got a lot of like league and club news right now.
We do.
We actually have, for the most part. So we do have some roster news. Ryko Arozarena sent out on loan to Forward Madison FC in League One. So he will get to see up close and personal some of the best kids around in U.S. soccer. In return, the Rowdies have taken Madison's and usually a starting keeper, Phil Breno, has come on loan to Tampa Bay for the remainder of the season. Breno didn't start their most recent game, and I think the expectation is that Ryko is going to kind of slot into that starting keeper spot. The keeper that played Madison's last game is a first-year pro, a year out of League Two, 2 years out of college. So this might be, you know, the way it's described in the press release by Neil is that in order for Ryko, like we've seen and we've heard many times about the potential that Ryko has, what they've seen him do in practice, what they believe he's able to do at this level, and the only way for him to continue to develop that right now is to get some playing time, and it's not happening here. CJ Cochran's kind of cemented himself in that starting goalkeeper spot, but remember, Cochran's only on loan for the season so far, so I think you know, if you need to send Ryko out, number one, to let him play, let him develop. Number two, see if he develops to that point where they're going to have to make a decision at the end of the year. If Cochran goes back to Oklahoma City, if Oklahoma City comes back from their hiatus, is Ryko going to be the guy, or do you have to make a different decision? So they get back a guy in Phil Breno who has played a couple games at the championship level for Charleston. And has played a bunch. I think he was Madison's starting keeper last year, played a bunch of games this year as well, too. It'll give him a chance to kind of prove himself again at the championship level, at least get some practice in with some of these teams. And I think we speculated maybe his deal, like his Instagram post kind of made it sound like he was not expecting to return to Madison. Maybe his contract's up at the end of this year. We don't know. But to give him a chance to you know, kind of put himself out there for a future team if his future is not going to be in Madison. Seems excited to be coming here. Excited to see what Ryko is able to do when he goes to Madison. Before we get into everything else, the one thing that jumped out at me, though, is there even like a little voice in the back of your head that says, hey, our goalkeeping lineup right now is two guys on loan and an academy kid?
Yes.
Worry you a little bit?
Yes.
No, not worried at all. I mean, where's CJ gonna go? He's not gonna get recalled. His team doesn't exist.
But what if he gets hurt? Then we've got a guy who's played twice at the championship level, like has had some, you know, decent looking stats, but it's all together way too small a sample size to say, yeah, this is a guy.
Okay. I mean, Who are you going to get at this point in the season that you feel comfortable with?
I don't think it's a question about who we need right now, because I mean, at this point, it's very rare that a club is going to have two starting level goalkeepers on roster. That's exceedingly rare across global soccer. I think the issue is, what are you doing about goalkeeper for next season? Because as it stands right now, yikes. Like, that's the biggest... We're going back into another offseason where that is legitimately probably the biggest hole we have on the roster. And at the moment, we don't even have, like, a GM. Like, not officially. We don't have, like, a president / GM of the club. So, you know, I hear the complaint, not the complaint. I don't want to make it phrase like it's a bad thing, but I hear like the comments that are like, what are we doing about goalkeeper for next season? If Ryko's going on loan, you know, we're bringing in a kid that's probably not going to get any playing time with us anyways. I think there's legitimate questions. Like, this is definitely, this move is 100% about Ryko getting playing time. And I don't know, and you can make an argument that to a certain degree, this is almost like a tryout for the Rowdies for next season. Like, you could almost make that argument.
Right.
Why almost? Like, he's getting playing time, which keepers and players need to develop if he's going to be here next year. I guess my thing is, I don't understand why with the panic, if, like, Ryko's on loan, we can recall him if we need him. Like,
I didn't say panic. I just had a little voice in the back of your head. Is it a little nagging thought?
No, because we can bring him back. Like, we didn't sell him. I don't know how long his deal was. So if his deal's up at the end of this year, then we were going to be in this position anyway, keeper wise. It kind of felt like when we brought CJ in, it was a stopgap anyway.
He's actually coming back, which I don't.
Right. I mean, because then I guess I'm not concerned because it's second division U.S. soccer, and there's always massive roster churn in the offseason. So there's going to be keepers available, and they I'm not concerned because it's not like, you know, Europe where the keepers are locked in and bought and expensive as hell. Like, there will be people out of their deals and we can make a move. You know, I know we don't technically have a president / GM, but I'm pretty sure Neil is probably handling a lot of that as well. Cause we've made moves. This one, Van Kessel, I think was right around that time as well. That might've been in the works previously, but it got over the hump. So, like, we're still making deals. It's not like we're rudderless and screwed next year. There'll be goalkeepers available if we need them. Evan Lauro will be healthy and needing a team to get back to the, you know, to make that MLS push again. Just saying.
Was honestly just going to say, like, we've seen lots of videos and pictures and stuff of him working out, rehabbing, training, interacting with current former members of the roster. Like, there's been player coaches. Could we have a player GM? Could we just, can Evan do that spot for us right now? Bring him in right now as a GM and let him work his way back into playing.
I mean, the thing with Phil Breno, though, you know, it's, I don't know if we saw him in Charleston while he was there. I think we played at least a game against him. I'm pretty sure.
I will tell you in just a minute.
Yeah, like, I'm pretty sure we've got at least one game against him, you know, but, you know, he doesn't have a ton of USL experience type of deal anyways. But, you know, I just, it's interesting from the concept of, like, in the immediate, I don't know, it gets interesting because, like, I mean, I understand what Dan's saying about the fact that, well, you can recall Ryko. He's not necessarily gone forever. I mean, yes, but you can't recall him in 5 minutes for a substitution if CJ goes down hurt in a game. And so, like, the question is, for at least, like, one game in that scenario, like, one, at least maybe a half of a game or whatever, you know, you'd be relying on Phil Breno no matter what. And, you know, is that a better backup situation than Ryko? And I don't really think that this decision had anything to do with who a better backup would be. I think this is a downgrade for the position in terms of what what your game day roster looks like this week against Loudon, right? You know, I think Brano is considered a downgrade compared to Ryko, but the Ryko move was made for the eyeing of next year. You know, I don't necessarily think that either of those two statements are inherently false.
All right, so here's his kind of overall results. 2019, played two games, 1-2-1 against Loudon away, and then also lost 1-0 at Pittsburgh. So he's playing behind Kuzminski there in Charleston, getting like relief appearances. In 2020, he plays in eight games as a starter. Four of those against Atlanta United, 2, winning 3, drawing 1. A loss to Birmingham at home, and then the remaining, or a draw, a 1-1 draw to Charlotte, and then a loss and a win versus Tampa Bay, 2-0 loss. Actually, both games were in Tampa Bay. 2-0 loss, Charleston loses to Tampa Bay, and then a 2-1 win in Tampa Bay.
So he has 10 games in USL?
10 games at championship level, yeah.
So that's
and
more than
around 30 or so at League One level.
So more than Ryko.
He's been pretty good in League One.
So more than Ryko.
Yeah. Yeah.
Basically, to me, this is just getting Ryko experience. Yeah, with an eye towards next year and just on his development.
Right.
Like, I mean, he's a raw talent, I think, and they just, players need minutes, and they found a place that it works for both ends. We have an experienced backup keeper, and Ryko will get some minutes. I mean, I'm not really concerned about much else there. I hope Ryko gets those minutes, gets that experience, and if we keep him, is a solid starter option for next season.
Yeah, I have on occasion watched Madison games because I kind of like them, and they have a pretty fun atmosphere watching on TV. But I'll probably be watching some more games. Breno gets to play with another Fernandez brother, so you know he gets to add one to his collection there. He's we'll have two now. All right, next up, the Rowdies futsal teams have been playing. The youth sides have been playing in, I think it's in Orlando, isn't it? The United Futsal National Championship tournaments. There are three boys teams: a boys 7 and 8, a boys 9 and 10, boys 11 and 12, and then girls at the same age levels. First day of competition, all six teams split their two games 1-1, and then moving on to today. Let's see. Let's just go through the finals for the teams that have brought home some medals. The boys 11-12 score in penalties to win their final game of the national championships, take first place in the Division II bronze bracket. Congrats to those kids. The girls 9-10 win third place in Division II gold bracket. They move up to Division I in the world championships that begin on Friday, so they will continue playing. At the end of this week, girls 11-12 take first place in Division II bronze. Girls 7-8 take third place in Division I silver. So all the girls teams claim some medals in their divisions. Now, here we go. Just 3 minutes ago, a final wrap up on the national championships. Boys 7 and 8 were fourth in the silver bracket. So were the boys 9 and 10. Boys 11 and 12 were first in the bronze bracket. Girls 7 and 8, third in the silver. Girls 9-10, third in the gold. And girls 11-12, first in the bronze. So congrats to not only all the kids who went along and participated in that tournament and the ones who are going on to the World Championships, but also to the Rowdy staff and people who have been working with those kids and coaching those kids and getting them ready for this tournament. Nice. Congrats. I like that.
Seriously.
Cool to see.
Seriously, congrats to everybody involved because that's – they've put in a ton of work for something that probably a lot of people in the fan base don't really know a lot about, or, you know, it's not really on the forefront of their minds. Massive congrats to all the kids that were playing, and the coaches that were involved, the directors involved. Honestly, like, well done, guys. Well done.
I'm going to say, for, like, this is what first year program for them doing, at least going to these kind of competitions to take, you know, take six teams up there, four teams get medals in the brackets, one team advancing to the world championships. That's pretty damn cool. I'll take that. Congrats to them and congrats to the staff involved. The other league news, there have been some rumors, some teases about expansion coming. There was a big the one rumor was that the championship was going to be placing a team in New Orleans, and then all of a sudden League One announced they were adding a team yesterday. Lots of misguided speculation that it was going to be Knoxville from League Two moving up, based on people trying to sleuth out some things in the picture. Turns out to be a brand new club in California, Santa Barbara, coming in, I believe, next year. But then today, one of the USL bigwigs down at headquarters dropped the news that there will be more expansion news coming tomorrow. That we may be seeing a championship team, it sounds like, being added in New Orleans. Thoughts on that one? I'm going to say, out of the three of us, Dan most likely to have been to have gone to New Orleans.
Yes, I broke my hand there.
Of course you did.
Never been.
I've driven through it. Like, I've literally driven on the interstate that goes through the city, but I've never stopped in the city before.
Yeah, farthest I've gotten on that road is Mobile, Alabama, but. So looking at mileage, looking at travel time, this would be about the equivalent of a trip to Charleston, trip to Charlotte, to a little bit over 10 hours. Excited for a possible potential new road trip?
I don't want to do that again. Let me take it, it's this story we can tell on air a bit. I was coming back from Texas after one of the Rays road trips, and we stopped in New Orleans overnight. And if you know me personally and we've talked, you would know that I have had a lot to drink in my life sometimes on a Rowdies game. New Orleans was the worst I've ever been.
Worse than Jacksonville?
Yeah, it was probably on par. Probably worse than New Orleans.
If New Orleans was worse than Jacksonville, then how do you know you actually went to New Orleans? Because we had to tell you a bunch of details about Jacksonville.
So, well, I pretend quite like
being there.
Quite like Jacksonville, I remember getting there because I didn't drink in the car when we were driving. But when we got into after the hotel, all I need to, I'm being told to edit this story from Casey, but all I'm gonna say is I almost bought cocaine off a homeless man that was saying, try before you buy. So I don't need to go back to New Orleans.
No, I mean, you can make that kind of deal in Pasco from what I've heard.
It's not cocaine here. That's too high class.
Just ground up African snails.
Yeah. It's just, so, yeah. I mean, so when I say I broke my hand, there's iron or metal horse heads that lined, you know, the street. Apparently, and that's because there was a sober friend, a semi-sober friend there. I was like, I can't feel my hand, and just started hauling off and punching them. Now, I woke up in the hotel bed, and I, for some reason, pushed all of the sheets off. So I'm on gross bare hotel mattress. There's blood all over the sheets because of my hand is bloodied and it was all purple and swollen. If you hear the story and are really curious, you can, if I make a fist with my right hand and between my pinky and ring finger knuckle, you can feel a piece of bone there from that incident. So, I mean, New Orleans is great. You should go, but don't expect me to be there.
What a ringing endorsement.
It's a great city. It's a lot of fun.
And New Orleans has had basically the equivalent of a third or fourth division team off and on over the years. Like, it's not something brand new to the area, but I also don't know that there's been a huge demand for it. But now that MLS Next Pro is moving into the mighty bastion of Huntsville, Alabama, I guess USL has to strike back somehow.
The soccer wars continue. Yes.
I'm reclassifying as soccer risk now.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, this is... I there's a lot of question marks. My comment on Twitter was this. If USL actually is going to New Orleans, and this is a thing, the owner will have to make, like... They have to. I hope that they have a good venue that is well received within the area, and that they have enough money to make a big enough splash. Because yeah, sure, New Orleans, it's had like a semi pro team for a few years. Like, they've had the Jesters roll in through there for a while and things like that, but they've never been exceptionally well supported clubs. And now, granted, how much support are you really going to give a semi pro team? Odds are probably not a lot anyways. But, you know, there's not been, like, there's not a significant American Outlaws chapter in New Orleans. It exists. I mean, it's not tiny. It's not insignificant. But it's not, like, known for its presence, right? And just using that as a bellwether, like, if that isn't really there, then why would you think a lot of support is there for a lower division team? And I will say this, again, this is where money is important, because you have to make a massive splash. Now, I'm not saying in terms of like spending money in terms of players, but you have to get your name out there. I hope you've got a lot of brand experts that can really create an identity that the city will like, and then you get a good marketing team and social media team to capitalize on that, because that is everything. Like, you have got to hit that ground running full steam ahead, because if you come out and say, we have a team, and then nobody hears from you again for another 6 months, you might as well just pack it all up and go home.
Speaking of, and I'm just going to just segue right into this, because you just said it perfectly. Speaking of announcing new teams and having a brand and making an impression on the local fans, a new indoor soccer team has been announced, men's and women's side, to be playing at I know they call it the Yuengling Center these days. It's always the Sun Dome to me.
Always the Sun Dome.
The Tampa Bay Strikers playing in the Sun Dome in National Indoor Soccer League. So different league than the other indoor team up the road, the Florida Tropics, kicking off next year. Although they've got one of the former Tropics, founders or executives or whatever on board with them. A guy with somewhat of a checkered past when it comes to business dealings in this area. Lot of reactions to just the name in general, which I'm going to be honest, like, you know, it's not like they went out there and colored themselves red and gold and put, you know, like, Strikers is kind of a, you know, it's this might be the one case where calling yourselves like Tampa Bay United FC might have been a better option, but the name doesn't seem to bug me as much as, like, yeah, you know, it doesn't seem like they've necessarily done the research or have investigated the local scene enough before, like, plopping down some money and starting a team. Wouldn't mind, like, being able to go watch a men or women indoor soccer team that wouldn't take me twice as long to drive there as the game would take there and back, but I don't know about this one. What do you guys think?
In the words of Ariana Grande, thank you, next.
Oh, man. never been a big fan of indoor soccer. I've never been a fan of major fan of futsal. I've never even been a fan of like short-sighted games, like if you're playing at like Cinco Soccer or Fast Five, stuff like that. I've never been a fan of that type of stuff either. Give me 11 on 11 or give me nothing. And I can't get excited about small-sided games to begin with. So and in reality, that's the reason why like I've never gone to Lakeland for a Tropics game for the indoor team is because I just don't. Indoor has never been exciting for me, no matter what it is. And I even went to a Tampa Bay Terror game at Bayfront Center back when I was like six years old at that point. Like I actually went to a game at Bayfront Center. I've never really cared a whole lot for that sport. It just, I don't know why. So you're probably never going to see me at one of those games. Probably. And I'm not going to be a big fan of it. I just don't. I don't know where the demand for this is. I don't think there is any, to be honest.
It's kind of curious. I haven't been like sitting around desperate for a indoor team that's slightly closer than Lakeland, but yeah.
I mean, it's weird because like, If you had teams like where Lakeland is playing, right? Like you've got teams like Baltimore Blast and was it San Diego is the other like really big clubs in those leagues. Yeah. Like if they were coming to Tampa and playing at Sundome, like that might okay, at least there's some history there, right? Like, at least there's some level of history respect to those organizations. But I just don't care. And especially since this feels so much like it's basically just a spat between two rich people. Like, you can't help but think that this whole thing is like Andrew Haynes wanted to move the Tropics out of Lakeland and into the Sun Dome, and the other owner said, no, I'm going to keep him in Lakeland. So he said, fine, I'll start a new team and do it my way. Like, it's hard not to envision that that's exactly what happened.
So is this a Chattanooga Red Wolves versus Chattanooga FC kind of situation?
Kinda.
Okay.
Yeah, It's hard for me to get excited about a club who potentially...
It's hard for you to get excited. Continue. Okay, before we start, I just want to say Baltimore Blast also sounds like the thing that homeless man in New Orleans was trying to sell me.
There you go.
Sounds like one of those new, like a new Mountain Dew flavor.
Yeah, but I mean, look, if you're looking at clubs, you know, this is like the same thing. If you're like, you know, New York City or New York Red Bulls, right? Like, I would be a Red Bulls fan because they were there first, and the city thing is just a forced corporate entity, like basically kind of just being shoved down your throat. I can't get excited about an organization that's not being created inherently for just the good of the game for a community that doesn't have representation in it. This community has representation in the field of soccer and in the field of indoor soccer. This isn't growing anything. I think that's my issue with it.
I want to fight you there because Lakeland is a hell of a lot farther for me to drive than the Yingling Center. It is almost another 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So, like, granted, from the little bit I looked into it, it's not even the same division as the Tropics. It's, like, the lower... Like,
yeah.
So that's going to hold me back. I mean, granted, like, similar to you, watching indoor has never really... Or small-sided games or anything like that has not really done anything for me. But
I would probably give it a try if it there wasn't all of this other, if I was casual and just found like this team and it was like, I think the pricing is a little bit high for what it is too, but I understand you also have to pay, you know, pay for things. But right. If I had like, if I had the option of a Rowdy's ticket or this indoor soccer ticket, I'm going to go, because I think the price is the same, I'm going to a Rowdy's game. Yeah. And I think most people would probably make that choice, I would hope. But it is, if it was the same league as the Tropics, they would probably have my support if I was going to go, just because I'm not driving that extra 45 minutes to Lakeland.
Yeah, I was just there last weekend, and it's not a trip I'm looking to do again anytime soon.
And, I mean, don't get me wrong, like, I'm never going to go to a Lakeland game. I'm never going to go to a Strikers game. But if I could, if it like I, something I was going to get into, like I said, I would probably do some research into the history. Like that's how I chose, you know, a Premier League club or an Italian team. And probably would, but I think the distance from Lakeland to here would be the problem for me, and I would end up with the closer team.
Now, what if they had dollar beer night, Dan?
Well, the Rowdy's dollar beer night, it was also my girlfriend at the time took me. That was like with her, like her family and I, and her and I went. But it also happened to be dollar beer night, which made it tolerable back then because it was the inaugural year at Steinbrenner. And I wouldn't say the Rowdies were great. And I wouldn't say the product was great, but the beer was.
I love that we were all at that game and none of us had any clue who the other ones were at that point. Because yeah. I know it's I was at that game. I know I was there. All right. So let's flip back here. Let's take a look at some of the... You know, we have the section about like notable and upset results, and none of them really seem to be upsets or even that particularly notable. Last week, Pittsburgh beat Indianapolis, Atlanta and Birmingham drew, Detroit and Hartford drew, Indy turned around and lost to Detroit, Pittsburgh stomped Miami, Louisville really stomped New York, Memphis beats Phoenix, but, you know, that's not impressive anymore, and Charleston lost to Birmingham. Coming up this week, right now, tonight, Miami and Charleston are playing. Last time I looked, let's see if it's still the case. Miami, I believe, is up 1-0 on Charleston. Miami has kind of, if this result holds, will definitely have solidified themselves in that last playoff spot. A game has ended full time, 1-0 to Miami at home in front of 752 fans. So Miami has solidified themselves in the seventh spot, giving themselves a 5-point lead over Tulsa. Coming up on Friday, New York is going to play Indianapolis. I don't really think we can even call that notable by any stretch of the imagination, other than Jordan Adebayo-Smith might play. Other than that, that game doesn't mean anything. Other games going on this weekend, Eastern Conference games. We got a couple crossover games, a couple interconference games. But starting off, you've got Charleston hosting Hartford, Orange County hosting Miami, Memphis and Louisville is probably the most notable one, the two teams in front of us. What are we kind of hoping there for? Like just a draw in that game? I don't think we want either one particularly winning or another. Although if Memphis loses, the Rowdies could move into second with the result this weekend over Loudoun. New Mexico is going to host Pittsburgh. Monterey Bay is going to host Detroit. Sacramento is going to host Birmingham. You got a lot of East Coast teams heading out west this week, which generally has not been a good sign for the Eastern Conference teams. So, however, it's Miami, it's Pittsburgh, Detroit, and Birmingham. Teams near us, I mean, Pittsburgh is the closest. I mean, Detroit's only 3 points back also. But nothing huge. Especially considering the Rowdies are going to play Loudoun, a team with a similar record to Hartford, but a twice worse goal difference in one fewer games heading into this weekend. Your current standings, Louisville's on top with 39 points, Memphis in second with 38, the Rowdies in third with 36, Pittsburgh and Detroit level with 33 points each, Birmingham in sixth spot with 29, Miami with now 27. Those are your current playoffs teams. Tulsa is on the outside looking in with 22. Indy right behind them with 21. You would be forgiven for thinking 21 was the number of consecutive games they've lost. They're just bad right now. Hartford, 16 points. Atlanta United, 2. And Loudoun, both with 15. Rowdies traveled to Loudoun this weekend. Charleston Battery at 9 points after 19 games. They're bad. That's just, it's stunning to me how bad they are this year. And Red Bulls, 2. And we thought Charleston maybe was turning a corner with Connor Casey there. They've now lost 5 straight also. Red Bulls, 2. Also, at the very bottom of the table, 6 points after 18 games. Terrible. Rowdies head to Loudoun this weekend, and there's really not a lot to say about that other than, God, you got to win this game. Let's not, for starters, Connor Antley missed the last game due to injury. Jordan Scarlett's going to miss this game due to a red card. If Connor Antley's not available, what do you expect to see in the defense for Tampa Bay?
Back to the back three.
Yeah, and Vin Caziel will be there. So it'll be like Weick, Van Caziel, and Guillen.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I don't see the team doing anything else. I don't think who else. I can't think of anybody else that would do.
It's also Loudoun.
Yeah.
So like,
exactly.
Don't rush Connor back. Give him a week, and just play the three at the back, and you know, do your thing up top.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to throw Santi Castaneda out there for a start.
He's a midfielder. Bring in Tate.
Yeah, bring in Tate Johnson.
Yeah. One of them was a defender. I forgot which one was which. all right, we do have some listener questions. Let me dig these up real quick.
Let me touch on this. Before we mention it, I just want to point out that for those of you that aren't keeping track of this, the Tampa Bay Rowdies have, when they go into this game this weekend, they have not lost a game in 77 days.
So that actually, that's one of our more recent questions, but I'm going to jump to that one first from Mitch. Rowdies have not lost since April 30th, are the only team that can make that claim. I think Louisville's lost 2 games in that time span. Memphis, Louisville's lost 3 games. Including one to Tampa Bay. Memphis has lost, I think, 2, including one to Tampa Bay. Are the Rowdies the best team in at least the Eastern Conference right now?
Tied. I'm not giving them the mantle yet.
Results say yes, but are results everything? Are we playing like the best in some games? I think what worries me is a couple of those draws in those 77 days or whatever weren't the best in the conference or the league type draws. That Charleston one stands out in my head. So we're the hottest, I guess you could say, but the best, right. I wouldn't go that far.
Any other thoughts, Steven?
I mean, Louisville and Memphis are still great. I mean, look, I get it. We've beaten Louisville. We've beaten Memphis. We've beaten Pittsburgh, right, in this 77-day stretch. I get it. There's a lot of reason why you would think that the Rowdies are number one. The problem is that I don't want to ever get into this mentality that we're the best when we're technically sitting in third place. And those teams are all good this year. There's no reason to suggest that those teams couldn't beat us on any other night. Yeah, did we look great against all 3 of them? Sure we did. Absolutely. That doesn't mean that they're not talented. We just got the better of them on the night. So I cannot sit here and endorse a number one position. Like, in terms of, like, mentally speaking, power ranking, like, you know, LOL, let's make a list type. I cannot do it. Cannot go that
See,
far.
Power rankings, I'd put us number one, but I think that's just based on current form. I think current form, we are the hottest team in the league. I wouldn't say we're
Agreed.
The best team in the league right now.
Yeah,
I would just say we're the hottest.
100%. I 100% concur with that. If you're going to do a power ranking that's modified based on just trends, yes, I think the Rowdies, without question, are the number one team in the league. I think we are better than San Antonio. But, yeah, it's just in terms of actual, like, if you're doing a scientific guess of where the end of the season is, yeah, no, I'm not giving us that right.
All right, that question came from Mitch, who has several, but we'll come back to some of his in a few minutes. From Tom Denham. After Hartford's last outing at Al Lang, how great was it to see them snatch defeat from the jaws of victory at home on Saturday?
Poetic.
To me, I love that game, not just because we won and we won shorthanded and we rallied from after giving up a lead and then somehow managed to win on two penalties, but getting the 3 points over Hartford after the way that game went down at Al Lang made it a little bit sweeter. I won't lie.
I mean,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, that game, imagine, if you will, you're this powerful entity and you shrink down to this tiny size to bend space and time and defy all physics to come out the other side. To come out the other side and achieve a victory that is just not probable and not expected.
Is this Ant-Man up Thanos' butthole?
I was just going to say, this is exactly the Thanos butt theory.
Yeah.
100% Thanos butt theory.
Or is this from The Boys in season 3? Yeah.
Let's not go into deep descriptions there.
Is that what this is? But I was going to say, the only thing that would have made my Saturday better is, and again, I don't usually like people losing their jobs, but if Phoenix fired their coach, as we spoke last week, Steve, after all of their complaining about how their guy deserved manager of the year over Neil Collins, this is just so chef's kiss. And then after that Hartford loss in the way it happened, I think it was just perfect. I loved all of the karma and all of the spite that was in my body left after that Leo penalty in stoppage time.
I'm gonna be honest, I'm surprised he's still a coach of that team right now.
I'm a little surprised too. Going back to Mitch, just over halfway through the year, who has been the MVP so far from the Rowdies? Now, I'll give you an option. You can either come up with your own, or we did have some other listeners make suggestions. You want to choose from the ones that were suggested, or you want to come up with your own?
I have an opinion on mine, but
you want to go through the suggestions first and see what you think?
I'm okay with that.
All right, one suggestion was Lewis Hilton. One suggestion was C.J. Cochran, especially after reclaiming his starting spot as GK1. And then the one I think I'm going to go with out of these suggestions from Stephen Connell, whoever installed the dividers between the urinals in the men's bathrooms.
Yes. Yes. Thank heaven they finally did that.
I've used my privilege to use the press box bathroom, and I've occasionally we have the ones down under the stadium when we're doing the pregame show. So I try and take care of that business, or at least hit up the trailer sometimes. But yeah, whoever was like, let's finally put a piece of green
anything
plastic or fiberboard or whatever here. Yes, thank you very much.
So bad. My MVP of the season so far, because he was called in to do a role that he was never expected, and he saved us with a lot of points, and he still saves us with a lot of points. That's Connor Antley.
Okay.
That's my MVP so far of the year, because my goodness, has that man performed admirably in a role that he was not supposed to be in when the ball kicked off this year.
I thought you were going to say Beavis, but I agree with Connor Antley. I am going to have to not say Lewis Hilton this time. I do think he is solid. I think Connor Antley has been massive with his versatility.
That's it. You just plummeted. That's what the T-shirt sales just plummeted. Casey's going to have a word.
I'm gonna give it to Leo. I think freeing Leo into the middle of the pitch has changed our offensive struggles from earlier in the year. I think it's straightened it out, and I think and you could also make the shout for Lakava. He's been on a goal scoring tear. He's a spark plug. But Leo is just having, it's Leo unleashed is basically my motto for the season so far. In this second phase of the season, it's just been Leo unleashed, and he's just been tearing it up. And I think you've noticed, like, Seba was of sorts last year. I think you're seeing Leo's leadership and how these guys look to Leo as a leader on this team. And I just think I have to give my current MVP to Leo Fernandez.
Yeah, so, you know, there's the saying that, you know, offense wins games, defense wins championships, not necessarily in the realm of soccer, but I think it applies too. We've seen that apply to Tampa Bay the last couple of years, although we haven't actually won the championship. We've been there. We've had that opportunity for 2 years. If it was end of the season, I'd be looking at someone like a Lewis Hilton or a C.J. Cochran for the leadership and the work they've done throughout the field. But we're mid-season, and right now we're in the offense wins games point. So it may be cliche, but I'm going with one of the guys who has provided the goals, which makes it either Jake Lakava or Leo Fernandez, because that has been the majority of the goals in the absence of the goals provided by Sebastian Guenzatti and Steven Dos Santos last year. But it's not Jake Lakava, because he's been great. He's been important. He's been key. He's been vital. But he's also kind of doing what he was expected to do. Leo's kind of getting back into a position he hasn't played and taking on a role he hasn't been in with this team for a little while. And he's performing, and he's taken over that role of penalty kicks and is performing. So to me right now, Leo Fernandez is the midseason MVP.
I mean, I know we agree, but I mean, your argument against Lakava is he's doing what he's supposed to. They're all doing what they're supposed to. That's why they're in that role.
Lakava's excelling.
Okay, then let's change the conversation a little bit. If the season ended today, you know,
because
let's put it this way: if you're gonna go with like leadership qualities and, you know, clubhouse impressions and things like that, I mean, you could make a heck of a shout for Aaron Guillen.
Yeah. In my head, and it's why it usually happens, there's an offensive player and a defensive player. I honestly think a midfielder, you should break it down in the three different phases or the three different spots, because they each excel, and the defense needs the midfield and the forwards need the midfield and the midfield needs, you know what I mean? Like, it's all interlinked. So it's hard to just give one player. And I think, I think your argument about Connor Antley being versatile and playing, you know, wing back or center back or wherever he's needed, is probably the overwhelming vote for like an MVP overall, if it was the end of the season, especially if this keeps up. But I think Leo would get my, like offensive player. Hilton would get my midfielder. And then I'm going to give it to Aaron Guillen on the back line and then Antley, like an overall, like most valuable, like utility player, basically.
Yeah. It's the difference between like a best offensive player of the year award versus most valuable player of a club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think it's very hard to have right now the most valuable player out of this club at this point in the season. I think, let's see, nobody, like, it's hard to say somebody has put this team on their back. Like, there was times I would say last year that like Lasso dragged and Loro together, like, dragged this club, or Seba put the team on his back and dragged this club through a couple games. Leo has done that in some, you know, game. Lakava has kind of done it, but like, let's see. There's too many games left. But I think right now Leo is still again. But we'll see. We'll see. It's a long season.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Leo's just been an absolute mutant so far this season, and I'm going to give it to him too. Similar question, but maybe a slightly different angle you can go off on it with, from our friend at Soccer Crush. Who's crushing it so far this season? Their choice? Neil Collins.
I mean, Neil's just doing Neil's thing. I'd say
Leo's definitely crushing it. So is LaCava.
Yeah, LaCava's crushing it. I would have to go, because I just gave it to Leo, I'll go Jake LaCava. He's absolutely crushing it. He stepped into a new team and it's been like he's been here for a while, settled in immediately, and is tearing it up.
I got to go with the girls that crush. Neil Collins he's taken an almost impossible schedule to begin the year, weathered the storm, has now changed up the formation now a little bit, at least in the last couple weeks, and has this team in third, in a pretty solid third, well, kind of. Like, he is so far absolutely killing it. And at this point, like, it almost feels like the Rowdies are just on cruise control at the moment. And that's a lot of credit to him.
I'm going to give it to John Stead. Screw Neil. I'm just kidding. John Stead's been here more this season than... No, I'm just kidding. Neil deserves all the plaudits always.
All right. I think we got two more questions, and then we'll get out of here for tonight because we're already coming up on an hour and a half. If he makes an, and I think this is what Mitch is getting at, if he makes an appearance in the rest of the games from here on out, Lucky's 100th cap could come in the, I believe it's the home game versus Detroit City. What's his legacy going to be with the Tampa Bay Rowdies?
And you're always going to think of that Louisville Eastern Conference final.
Right.
But I think he's was here, you know, what, 2014, I think it was. And he was, you know, he was loved then. Well, he was liked then, but I think he's coming back in the journey from there to, you know, around and back. And he's just cemented himself as one of the biggest impact players for this team. There's not too many people that would embrace a role and excel in that role that he has in such a manner. And just with so much professionalism, it's hard to say enough good things about him. He's just a genuine human being and a great guy, and just embraced his role here. And again, has just made it his. Like, there will never be a super sub like Lucky M. Kosana in this league, I don't think. Especially for us. I just don't think you'll have somebody that's able to come in short amount of time and make such an impact in a game.
Yeah, I mean, the Louisville game will be the one that will be the first thing to everyone's memory, but this is a guy who in both of his first games in Tampa Bay, the first time he signed here and then when he returned, came off the bench to score the game winner late in games in both of those. Like, this is just what he does. And combine that with the work he's been doing with some of the youth sides off as well, too. Like, there's been a lot of important players. There's been a lot of big figures that have come through here who have meant a lot to the fan base. If you told me we could build a statue of one player, it's Lucky to me. I mean, I know Georgie's got the track record with the goals and everything else, but no one's provided the moments that Lucky M. Kosana has, in my opinion, the ones that stand out weeks and months and years later. And to me, it's got to be him.
Steven is the resident, you know, geriatric fan. I think he should weigh in here. Just the one who's been here the longest, you know. You're not the oldest, but you're the oldest.
I mean, I know, but
he's like 40 to me.
I hate you both. You know, Lucky, it's hard because he did go for a bit, and he was part of the Cosmos, and he did things with the Cosmos, so it's like you don't want to make him too big of an icon, you know? So I think, like, it gets tricky ultimately. Like, you can make an argument that his impression as a player in the lower division soccer is, as a whole, is bigger than just his part with the Rowdies. Like, and I think that's where things get tricky when it comes to legacy, is I think for me, he's just going to be known as an amazing super sub player. And that game against Louisville is going to always be the game. ultimately. I don't know. It's interesting. Like, I mean, obviously he's played a lot longer than Daniel Antoniuk, who had, you know, an amazing scoring rate as a sub back in 2012. So he's higher on the list when it comes to super subs than Dan. So, like, I mean, I'm not trying to take anything away from Lucky, but it's just, I don't know. It's weird because, like, he's not, like, if you were to create, like, a Mount Rushmore of players, I don't think I'd put him on it. Like, I don't think he's crossed into that type of threshold. He's always going to be.
But a Mount Rushmore moments, he's definitely up there, maybe more than once.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Most important moments of the team history, modern team history, 100%. Mount Rushmore of the modern team history, nah, I don't think I'm going to go that far.
Okay. Actually, that was the last question. However, we do have a only in U.S. Lower division soccer. Down in League One, Greenville was playing Tormenta FC tonight. Greenville jumped out to a 4-0 lead. Game finished 5-5.
I never want to have to watch a rowdy soccer game that does that.
In the words of Mitch, what the hell? All right, let's wrap up and get out of here.
Yes, please. I need to take a painkiller and go to bed.
All right. Thank you, as always, to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier for USL, MLS, and U.S. soccer. Get your scarves at roughneckscarves.com. Thank you to our friends at Wolfface, who I just found out yesterday are playing a show in Bradenton, like 10 minutes from my house, on a night that the Rowdies are away. Actually, the night of the Rowdies at Detroit City. I am totally going to this show. It's going to be at this weird and like new little like coffee house in Bradenton, which seems like an odd place for Wolfface to be playing, but I don't care. I'm going. I'm excited for it. Thank you to Radio St. Pete. Thank you to Shamrock. Thank you to Corrigan's. Thank you to everybody who has, like you mentioned in the beginning of the show, the Patreons who have continued to make Ricky Hill's favorite podcast something you can listen to on a regular basis. We appreciate you guys. If you'd like to do this on an ongoing basis, go to patreon.com/unusedsubspod. And we can get weird together. We would love for you to do that. If you're tired of the same old cookie cutter templates for uniforms made by companies like Adidas and Nike, and you're looking for a unique, completely custom uniform for your youth club, Sunday league squad, adult, or even pro team, Icarus FC is the place to go. Get your custom kits today at IcarusFC.com. And once you've ordered your scarves from Roughneck and your kits from Icarus, you've had a heck of a day. You deserve to treat yourself to some Taco Bus. So get to one of their 11 locations and stuff your face with some food. Gentlemen, road game this weekend. So we'll have to wait till next week to get back at Al Lang, but it will get here eventually, and so will we. Let's go.
Yeah. I think I'm not committing myself to any plans this weekend. Last weekend, I was in the middle of a 6-hour game of Terraforming Mars. That was a good time. I lost. It was in third place. It was very disappointing. All right, everybody. Well, everybody have a good night. We will talk and chat during the week. And, of course, again, the Rowdies are on the road this weekend. So if you are at any of the watch parties, whether that'll be at, like, Shamrock or at Corrigan's, I mean, heck, if we are there, we'll say hi. I'd be happy to see you. All right, everybody, have safe travels and have a good week. And with everything, go Rowdies.